Our Bible reading tonight comes from John chapter 11, verses 17 to 27. On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. "Lord," Martha said to Jesus, "if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha answered, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live, even though he dies, and whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she told him. "I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who has come into the world." This is God's word.
We were recently on a holiday in Japan. We were at Nagoya, which is a big city, staying near the station. If you've ever been in Japan, a big city near the station, big shopping centres. And we're just wandering around, as you tend to do on holidays. We came across this shop called, it was lovely in Japan when you can read the signs, Handkerchief Gallery was the name of the shop. And so we're wandering through, and they sell hankies. But they're mostly really nice hankies. And they had a few framed, and we thought, we're looking through, saying, this wouldn't be a bad idea. And we're tossing up the deer one and this and that. We came across this one here, which we thought would look very nice in our kitchen if we got it framed up. Now, have a look at this. Got it on Friday. I think that looks good. We're happy. That's a 1,000 yen hanky put in a frame. And but what's the, really and honestly, one of the reasons we were keen about this picture is not just we thought the image was a bit catching and would look good in our living area. It's also the word, hope. See, that is the most crucial word. That is the essential word. That is the life-giving word, hope. And we thought, actually, in our kitchen, it'd be nice to display that one word. As believers in Jesus, we have hope. Jesus offers hope. Hope out of hopelessness, as we see in John chapter 11. Lazarus, Jesus' good friend, is sick. He's really sick. Verse 3 of John chapter 11. So Lazarus' sisters sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is sick," and Jesus stays where he is for 2 more days. And Lazarus dies. Now, Jesus knows this. And only when he hears that does he bother starting his journey back to see Lazarus in Bethany where he lives, which is just outside of Jerusalem, where Lazarus lived with his sisters, Martha and Mary. Jesus goes back to this town just out of Jerusalem, from where he will be arrested and beaten and crucified. See, what follows John chapter 11 is a story of life and death for Jesus. But it's very significant because it's preceded by a story of death and life for Lazarus. And as such, this story can be our story, a story that there is hope out of hopelessness. Bethany, I say, it's 3 kilometres from Jerusalem. Let's call it a suburb beyond the city walls. On his arrival, verse 17, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Now, Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come out to Mary and Martha to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. So the situation's hopeless. And that's not good, because hope is essential for life. Everybody needs hope. Where the main reason we went to Japan is our son moved to Japan to work about 6 months ago. He was living in this town called Nagahama, working at a hotel, doing long shifts, getting time off in the middle of the day when he couldn't do anything, working every weekend for about 3 months, didn't know anybody except the people at the hotel, living in a box about, you know, so big. And he was just, and not getting trained and wondering, what am I doing here? I'm not being paid well. I've travelled all the way from Australia. And he was losing hope. You know when your kids ring you up just to talk to you? When you've got kids my age, you know things are bad. They just want to talk to mum and dad because I've got nothing else. And he had a gut full. He says, I can't take this anymore. I wanted to come here and work. I've always wanted to do this, but I'm going to resign. So he put in a letter saying, hey, I'm not capable for all these vast reasons. They said, Adam, we want to keep you. We've got a job for you now in Tokyo with our international business division. We got there just when he found that out. And we'd been talking to him on the phone. He's all negative and critical and depressed. We get there and he's full of life. And he's positive about the future because he had hope. For the weeks and even months before that, he was uncharacteristically negative and cynical. He had lost hope. Now, here is the reality, at least in material terms. This current world order is utterly hopeless. Second law of thermodynamics states, in rough terms, that the entire universe is a closed system. Within the entire universe is a closed system. Entropy increases over time. In other words, we live in a world of decay, a world of dispersion. In actual fact, this entropy drives everything, this falling apartness. And over time, our universe, if we follow our current physical laws, will become very cold and very dark. Civilization, human life, humanity, life itself, light itself, will one day all be gone. And what can we, us resourceful human beings, do about it? We can do nothing. We might as well try and put every drop of water in all the oceans in all the world on rockets and send them to Mars. That would be easier than stopping this process of decay that our universe is subject to. It's completely and utterly hopeless. Which is a crazy contradiction to the miracle and wonder of existence, and even beyond that, of life. Even more so, the miracle of human life. We people of language and self-reflection, of creativity, of hopes and dreams, we people who are future-oriented by our very nature. Us humans of culture and literature and music and art and love and joy and music and song, where did all that come from? And is it truly going to end in complete and utter emptiness? But don't worry. We're talking about a long way off, according to the scientists. We're talking billions of years. So you can relax. There's hope for today, isn't there? Oh, apart from this, your body, our bodies, your thoughts, your hopes and your dreams, your songs, your creativity, your person is subject to exactly the same processes of decay as the universe, except on a much shorter time frame. Like Lazarus, sickness can overtake and take us down like that, and it all stops. Not to mention accident and disaster and catastrophe and warfare and crime and terrorism, plane crashes. But let's imagine you do well. Let's imagine you live to a ripe old age. How many of us are going to be alive in the world year 2100? Not me. Maybe one or two, but I doubt it. And 2100 is as close to us as the year 1937. No, anyway, 34, I think. Right in the middle of the Great Depression, which has impacted my life enormously, because it wasn't that long ago. But you won't be alive then, in 2100. You'll be dead. Our life is but a breath, it's a vapor, it's a spark that flies up and flashes and then goes away. The darkness swallows us all in short shrift, and life is short. There's enough people here who are getting on in their years. If you're young, be brave and ask them, and they will all tell you that I was your age yesterday. And I can remember it like it was just like this. And where have all the years gone? I don't know where all the years are. I do know where they've gone, but they've just gone so fast. So what can you do about that? Oh, I'll tell you what. There's lots of books. There's lots online about what you can do. What you need to do is you need to exercise and eat well, lose weight, stop stressing, and whatever you do, don't smoke. Yeah? There's hope. Yeah? What, for 5 more years? 10, if I'm lucky? Because I do the right things. Lazarus is overcome by sickness. He's dead and buried 4 days. It's a scene of mourning that we come upon. Mary and Martha are trying to cope with this profound sense of loss, this profound sense of emptiness that many of you have experienced. And into this hopelessness comes Jesus days late. But with his coming, well, at least for Martha, there's a sense of hope, despite the hopelessness. So she gets up, she leaves the house, and she goes out to meet Jesus, her special visitor, because she's had lots of visitors, but she leaves the house for Jesus because he is her man of hope. She hopes. Martha retains this innate sense of hope despite her hopelessness. Verse 21. Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask. Poor Martha. Martha is mourning. She is lost in the fog. You might have been there. She's desperately clinging on to any thread of hope. The sense of reality that this might not be so, that Lazarus might not be dead, that this might not be the end. And it's as if she's in both blame and denial. If you were here, but even now you can do something, yeah? Which is kind of a normal part of the grieving process, blame and denial. It's not over. This can't be. You can do something, Jesus. I imagine doctors face this. First they get the blame, particularly oncologists. First they get the blame, you should have done this. And then, no, but you can do something more, can't you? Maybe someone needs to sit down with Martha and say to her gently, Martha, he's gone. There's nothing more we can do. I'm so sorry. And maybe that someone should be Jesus. But Jesus speaks to her and instead offers her hope, despite the hopelessness. Jesus says, your brother will rise again. Well, Martha's heard it before. These words of consolation from a pastor. All these people have been visiting her. Yeah, I know, I've heard it before. Verse 24, I know, says Martha, that he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Yeah, I know. This is what pious Jews, not the Sadducees, but most pious Jews believed. Because the Bible spoke of it, the prophet Daniel, in chapter 12, the end of Daniel. At that time, your people, everyone whose name is written in the book, will be delivered. Multitudes who sleep in the dust of the earth will awake, some to everlasting life, others to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise will shine like the brightness of the heavens, and those who lead many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. And Martha kind of says, yes, I believe, Lord, that Lazarus will rise with the righteous. I believe that. Yes, I believe in life beyond death. Yes, but can't you do something? This sense of hope, despite hopelessness, is actually a normal part of human experience. In fact, God made us this way. In the Wisdom Book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 3, verse 12, verse 11, God has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. God has put eternity in our heart. And so it takes great conviction to be an atheist. It goes against our nature. In the face of death, we all look for hope despite the hopelessness. We just can't accept that all the glory and all the wonder and all the personality of human life could just be snuffed out like that and over. You hear it in so many different ways. I know he's looking down on me from above. She must be an angel now. He still speaks to me, you know. He's still there with me. She's in a better place. People who have got no great conception of God, and those who do. Whether it be a concept of heaven, floating on a cloud, whether it be a concept of reincarnation, or even the Scientologists, this zappity life form that processes for a zillion billion years. The old atheist needs the bald-faced boldness to say we have come from nothing. Frankly, we are nothing, just some crazy miracle of consciousness that we don't understand, and we're going to nothing because there is nothing. The atheist needs that boldness or that blindness to say such things in the face of human life. And so there are actually very few true atheists, and certainly very few at funerals and in foxholes. Because something in the human spirit, something that I believe God put there as he made us in his image, hopes even in the face of death. A hope despite hopelessness, a yearning for life. This cannot be the end. And you all have it. Now, is it simply wishful thinking, as the atheist would tell us? Or is there any reliable grounds for this hope despite hopelessness? Is it simply wishful thinking? Well, let me put the question another way. Is there a God? Is there a Saviour? Is there a Lord who is Lord of life and death, who creates life and gives life, and therefore, being sovereign over life, provides the only grounds for hope, real hope, out of the seemingly and apparently in material words, inevitability and hopelessness of death? Let's go back to our conversation. Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha answered, I know he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die, and whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? Jesus takes the abstract, the impersonal idea of resurrection, and he makes it personal. I am the resurrection and the life. I am your hope in the face of your brother's death. I am your hope in the face of your own mortality. I am the resurrection. I am the life. And on that last day after physical death, Jesus says, the one who believes in me will live even though they die. And today in the present moment, and whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? Do you believe this? It changes life, doesn't it? Jesus offers hope out of hopelessness. Without him, it is hopeless. With him, there is hope. So Jesus asks Martha a question, the same question he asks all of us. It's a life and death question. It's a hope or hopelessness question. Jesus says to Martha, do you believe this? And Martha's response shows us the way from hopelessness to hope, from darkness to the light of life. Yes, Lord, she replied. I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who is to come into the world. Martha believes. John writes, not to tell us that Martha believed, as good as that is, John writes that we all might believe and find hope and life. In fact, he tells us that towards the end of his gospel, in chapter 20, he says, Jesus performed many other signs which are not in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. Just like Martha. In all of our varied expressions of hope, and we express our hope in different ways, in all of our different circumstances, isn't our hope at grounds just a hope for life? Not crooked and perverted and broken and painful, not short and sharp and harsh, but life as we know it can be and life as we know it should be. The life we were created for, isn't that what we hope for at ground? A life of joy and peace, a life of productivity and service and purpose and satisfaction and creativity and relationships that are true and pure. A life at peace with God, our Maker, and with others. A life at peace with creation itself, where our full self is realized and flourishing because we're living the life God made us for. That's what we want. That's what my son Adam wants in Japan. Really. He doesn't want to work in the hotel's central office. He wants to have a life that's worth living, that's productive, that's joyful, that's got healthy relationships, where he's serving and contributing and doing something worthwhile and enjoying. Every morning my feet hit the floor and I'm not a good waker-upper, but every day I just want to live the way I was made to live. I don't care if you're 15 or 50 or 80. Isn't that what you want? Isn't that what you even expect? To live the life that you were made for? That you hope for? And don't you want that life with reasonable expectation, despite the ridiculousness of the statement, don't you want that life to continue on forever? That life, that good life. World without end. Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. And he says, do you believe this? My hope and prayer for all of you, weary from camp, many of you, perhaps fired up by a weekend away. My hope and prayer for all of us is that we will take hold of Jesus and come humbly to him, that we will hear his good news. I am the resurrection and life. And we will believe and take hold of Jesus and take that to heart and then obey. Because in obedience, we find joy and the life we were made for. Find in Jesus hope. Out of hopelessness, to God be the glory. Amen.